supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, I have always believed that the hunger to be known is more fundamental than even our hunger for love. In today's world, alienation may very well be the source of much human suffering. But how do we get to know one another, really get to know one another, or even ourselves? By telling our story of what it's like to live inside our skin, and to do that in the presence of someone who is listening without judgment, just listening. So today's show is an open one, where we'll tell our stories about who we are, what it means to live inside of our skin, how we experience our lives, and the bulk of us will listen with compassion, not with judgment. We'll try to imagine that the stories we hear are our stories. Try to imagine what it would feel like if they were our stories. So I invite you to call in and tell us, what's it like to be you? Or call us and tell us your stories of what it's been like as a listener. Of course, we'll need to keep your stories brief because we could spend one whole show on one story, so keep them to within a minute or two, but I promise your voice will be heard. Our number, 888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499, and I am sure our lines will be filled up pretty soon, so call early in the show. But first, let's hear from Shane Ewing. He's one of our interns here at WHYY.
It was my freshman year in college, and my mom had just been diagnosed with breast cancer, and I was having a lot of trouble asking God why he'd do such a thing to someone so good at heart. I walked into the upstairs bathroom one night, and my mom had some scissors in her hand, and I saw that she was cutting her hair out. And I couldn't say much, but I did ask her why, and she said it was so she had control over her own self and not the cancer, and that the cancer didn't have any control over her at all, and she was going to beat it. And she wanted to be alone, and I realized that when she closed the door on me, I realized that it should never take something so sad, especially that sad, seeing something like that, to make you realize how happy someone makes you every day. And I've hugged her every single day for the last 2 years. She's been a cancer survivor. Tell her I love her. And I started realizing that God does take some of his angels with him, but he also keeps some on earth. I'm Shane, and I'm 22 years old.
And like he said, that was Shane Ewing, our intern here at WHYY. So why do we pick any particular vignette that we pick when we tell our stories? Why did Shane pick that one? I think most of us pick one that is of particular learning, insight, maybe one that's particularly joyous, but certainly one that defines our lives. And what was the experience of listening to Shane's story? Maybe you could feel your heart open up a little bit. Maybe you could think, yeah, he's right. He's right. We need to tell people we care about more often that we care about them. We need to love better. But the idea of listening to a story really changes us in a very fundamental way. We're going to go right to the phone lines and try to get as many of you on as possible. We're going to start with Richard on line four. Can we get Richard up?
I'm there.
Hi, Richard.
Hi. My question is two things. One, how do I listen without being judgmental? Number two, how do I get somebody to actually open up? There's a couple of people in my life that it would really be nice to know what's going on in their minds. And they just clam up.
Who are they?
My daughter and my grandson.
Okay. Why would you like to know what's going on inside their minds?
Because they live in very upsetting lifestyles.
So what would you like to know, Richard?
I'd like to... I don't understand why. Like, my wife lives with an addict. For like 7 years he hasn't worked, and he just basically takes the money that she makes from work and spends it.
Wait a minute. You said you wanted to know what goes on inside their minds.
Why doesn't she leave him, like, you know?
Well, that's not...
You know, tell me, you know, there must be a reason you stay with this guy.
Richard, that's judgment.
Yeah, I know that is.
All right, so let me ask a different question.
Okay.
You said you don't know why. Now, if you truly don't know why, that means you're confused about something.
Yes.
Okay. Let yourself be confused. Don't try to put her in a category. And don't try to judge her as good or bad or right or wrong or crazy or sane.
Basically, that's what I've done.
All right. Let's do something new now, okay?
Sure.
Let yourself be confused. This is a woman with a mind. She's a woman with a heart. Imagine looking in her eyes and saying, we're not talking about what she's doing at this moment in her life. Imagine looking in her eyes and saying, what's it like in there? What's it like? What are your dreams? What are your fears? What's it like to be you?
I've tried to do that, and she just doesn't open up.
I don't trust you, Richard. If I'm on the receiving end of your questions, guy,
right.
I don't trust you, because I can feel you're pointing a finger at me.
Okay.
And it feels like a gun, and I don't trust you. I'm not going to open up with you. Look, listen to me.
See, I think she's afraid that I'm going to expect change, and she doesn't want to.
Don't start thinking.
Don't
start thinking what she's thinking, because
right.
That's going to screw up understanding.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, okay? What's it like to be you?
Well, basically, I'm a real happy guy. I really enjoy life, and my two other children and I all... You know, are actively involved in things and have a really good life. And it just hurts us that this one is off in her own world. And I'm like 70 now, and she's like in her 40s. And I'm trying, I'd like to resolve this issue before we die.
Richard,
I guess. I don't know.
Is that it?
Basically.
You're thinking about your death and you'd like it resolved before you die?
Well, that's probably one thought.
All right, so here's one question. Here's one question you might want to ask her. Tell her that you suffer because of this, and somehow you'd like to make peace with her before you die. You don't want to carry this suffering for the rest of your life. Ask her questions. Is that possible? How can we do it? How can I help you, and how can you help me?
Yeah.
Lead with your heart, fella. You know,
I try, but somehow early, I get the feeling I'm just not getting through.
Well, you're not trying to get through. You're supposed to be opening up. You're not supposed
right.
to get anywhere. You're supposed to learn.
Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah. All right. I wish you the best. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Not so easy, this listening business, huh? Not so easy. There's an old parable that says... We're born with two ears and one mouth, so we should be listening twice as much as we speak. We've got Nick on the line. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine. It just got real quiet when you got on the line with me. It got quiet. I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
You are.
I can hear you now.
Okay. So. What you're involved with a listening project, yes?
Yeah, not so much a project. I lead trainings for corporations, leadership trainings, and one of the key components of my trainings is teaching people how to listen.
How do you do that? I could have used your consultation with my previous caller.
I understand. It It's actually quite involved. It's really a paradigm shift because it's really, let's put it this way. The first thing I do when I'm teaching about listening is I do a demonstration of listening. And I pick someone in the class and I ask them questions. And over the course of the next 20 minutes, I have a very deep conversation with them. And they end up telling me about their childhood, when they grew up, their parents, their hopes, their dreams, what's worked in their life, what hasn't worked. And I do that to demonstrate the power of listening non-judgmentally. Then we spend the next 5 hours taking apart what I did. And there's a lot of unlearning involved. There are beliefs that people have about the way people are that are not accurate, that get in the way of listening. We think, you said something very profound that very few people say, that people want to be heard, they want to be understood, they want to be listened to without being judged. And most people think that people don't want to be understood, that if they ask them real questions like, how do you feel, or what was that like for you, or what's it like living in your shoes, that people will turn around and say, that's none of your business. So nobody asks because they don't want the other person to say, they don't want to be put down.
Well, are you doing this in industry? Are you being well received? Because industry is about the bottom line. Listening takes time and doesn't pay very well.
Very well received. These are leadership trainings, and when we ask people to list the qualities of an effective leader, listening is on the top of the list. And very, when I tell people nobody listens, that what we call listening is waiting impatiently for somebody else to finish, that rings a bell for people. That strikes a chord. Everybody wants to be heard, and they know that they're not heard. And after I do that demonstration that I do, I ask people, I say, when's the last time somebody listened to you like that, that heard you, asked you about your life, your hopes, and your dreams? Sometimes people think that the questions I'm asking are too personal, they're intrusive, they're insulting. And the point I make to people is that what's insulting is what we do every day, so, not asking the questions, cutting people off, not listening, judging them.
Nick, let me ask you a quick question before we have to go. So tell me your story. What is it about Nick that makes this business of listening a center point of your life?
It's about contribution. It's about making a difference. It's a profound opportunity to have the opportunity to teach people things that dramatically alter the way they live.
Hmm.
The most fundamental level, that's what it's about. Whether they're in industry, whether it's, you know, not a corporate training or whatever, the reactions that people have when they truly learn how to listen, when they're given the keys to the safe, because as you said, understanding is so important, but where does understanding come from? It comes from listening.
Yeah.
And then listening is the conduit, the pipeline that gives the information that leads to understanding, and understanding leads to compassion and empathy. Without listening, there's no connection. There's no connection with other human beings.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more, and look at the state of the world today. There's not a whole lot of listening and a lot of reacting.
Absolutely.
Nick, I want to thank you for calling in, and thanks for your work.
You're welcome.
Thanks for telling us some of your story, too.
Sure.
And that's what the show's about today. We're having an open show about telling our stories of who we are. What do we choose to talk about? What's important to us? What's it like to live inside of our skin? If you could pick one story in your life that you feel you need to have people know, what would it be and why? And what's it like listening? How do we listen to other people's stories without judgment, without jumping in? How do we tolerate our own passivity? A man told me in my office a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about listening to his wife, and I said, you don't need to do anything. And he said, but I thought the reason we listened is so that we could do something to fix hurt. And he literally didn't understand that listening fixes hurt. Doing nothing often fixes hurt. We're going to take a short break now. We're going to come back with more calls. We've got more people I want to introduce you to. Our number is 888-477-9499. We've got one open line. And if the line's busy, keep trying. We'd love to hear your story. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, poet Natasha Trethewey. Many of her poems reflect on defining aspects of her life. Growing up biracial in Mississippi and the murder of her mother by her stepfather. Her new collection of poems called Native Guard was awarded the Pulitzer Prize. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're having an open show about our stories of our lives. What is our life about? What is significant in your life? What needs to be told? What needs to be heard and why? We're going to go to the phones in just a couple of minutes, but first I'm going to introduce you to Susan Magsiman. She's author of Family Stories and creator of FamilyStories.org. She's a founder of Family Stories Workshops also for low-income and at-risk families. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Ted, give us some examples of family stories and how different families define themselves and their important stories.
Well, I think the definition that we like best in families is having two people that care about the other, really being the definition of family. Beyond that, shapes and size and numbers and doesn't matter. And I think that's a really important place to start. You know, families are the place where we learn about intimacy. We learn about communications. And I think, as one of your callers said, there's a lot of miscommunication about that and a lot of mistruth early on about what communication really is. So as we meet with families from many, many walks of life, we find that there's a basic sense of vulnerability and a need to really be able to have families share what they're thinking and feeling, and it can be in any topic from, as you mentioned, at-risk families, a family that's recently lost their home, a child that's having trouble in school.
Susan, you mean you said people are vulnerable. Are you suggesting that it's important to share one's vulnerability with your family?
I think it's critical to be human to share one's vulnerability. But let me say, with that, you can't do that without the other person honoring that. It's a very private thing to open yourself up to another person. And in family, that's the place that we all begin to do that. I mean, from babies, we do that when we open ourselves up to parents.
Yeah, you know, as psychotherapists know, nothing grows without safety.
And
if you don't have safety at home, and the way to generate safety, of course, is by listening without judgment.
And predictability of that listening. So as a child begins to move and their world gets bigger and bigger, the predictability and the safety of being able to share more and more of their uncertainty in the world and help to have that defined or understood as they move into it, the interpretation becomes very important. And if that's unstable, a child doesn't put themselves into the world in such a big way. So socially, emotionally, cognitively, they can't grow in a healthy way because there's no safety for that. And I think that comes as a very visceral experience. It's really about emotion more than intellect and about the physical response to feeling safe to be able to share and communicate.
Susan, can listening be taught?
Absolutely. I think absolutely it can be taught. I think it's harder to teach the older you are because you have so many ingrained ideas about it. But one of your callers was great. They said the act of listening is waiting for the other person to stop. I think just witnessing someone talking about something that's important to them and seeing them in and of itself is listening, and the ability to stop and be quiet is a very difficult thing to do in our culture where there's so much noise.
Well, noise interferes with listening, and so does every conceivable emotion. Anxiety interferes with listening. Judgment interferes with listening. Insecurity does. All these emotions interfere with listening.
Well, I loved Richard when he was speaking about his daughter. And, you know, as a parent, I could feel, I have two boys, I could feel his fear for his daughter, you know, his love for his daughter that was getting in the way of hearing his daughter. And I think that we all do that.
Yeah, and yeah, actually love interferes with listening. But I don't think his love was the problem, it was his fear.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, we parents, sometimes the fear overshadows the love. Mm. Let me ask you, what's your story, Susan? How has your life changed by listening to these stories?
Well, you know, I started about 20 years ago with the birth of my oldest son, a learning company called Curiosity Kids, which was about the way children find and share their unique voices. Family stories came out of that experience in watching the way parents and children come together. And if I really reflect on it, how stories have changed my story is in the relationship with my own children and how much I've learned from them. And I'll give you a good example. Recently, my oldest son just graduated from high school, and he embarked on a month-long trip around the country with a band that he's playing in. And I was very much against it, very much afraid of his moving into the world in that way and not understanding it. And he looked at me and he said, "You need to support me and you need to trust me." And I stopped, you know, and I let him go and let him be everything that he had learned to be in the first 18 years of his life. And I think those are the profound experiences that can happen, whether you're a parent, you know, a mom, a child, a sister, a brother, a cousin. I think if you can really listen and see yourself in what's happening, that's really a wonderful opportunity to be alive.
Really, really listen to your children.
And it was everything in me. I had to stop. I had to stop and say, okay, leap of faith.
Yeah.
Really believing in someone who you've brought into the world, you've been with for a very long time, and then saying, okay, I believe in you.
Yeah, once our children are over a certain age, they don't need our anxiety anymore, they need our faith, as he so well instructed you. Thanks so much for joining us, Susan, and you do great work.
My pleasure, thank you.
Thank you. And we've got another Susan on the line waiting to join us. Susan, hi, you're on Voices.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
There's so much I could talk about, but to make it short, my family, for some years, I have about five brothers, and I was the only girl, born into a family where two parents were, during the 60s, radical, and considered themselves really good at expression and art and whatnot and creativity. But as it turns out, my entire family, including extended family, has been really bad at expressing themselves. And the thing I said when I called in was that I think the key to the problem and then the solution has been the inability for us to forgive one another and the inability to accept one another for who we are or who we may have become. And the most specific example I have, some years back, I was married, and my husband was accused of having done something to my niece. And to this day, it hasn't been proven. And to this day, I don't know if anything ever happened. I'm no longer with him, but for other reasons. But ultimately, the family and that part of the family has been completely disjointed and won't have anything to do with me. So what I'm saying is I think one of the biggest issues for the family has been that, that the lack of ability to forgive and accept.
Can I,
and just be open to talking about what's happened.
Susan, out of everything in your life, you chose this to tell us on the radio.
Yeah.
So let me ask, what's it like to be cut off from your family like this?
At one point, I write a lot of poetry, and at one point I described it as feeling like someone on one of the trains being sent off to the concentration camp.
That's how it feels?
Yeah.
Does it feel that way now, today?
Yeah, every time I talk about it, which isn't often. I tried to talk about it in therapy several different times, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't constructive, or something didn't happen there. But ultimately, it has been the greatest loss of my life. Both my parents have passed away, and I'm sad about that, but it doesn't feel at all the same.
Well, I so appreciate your telling your story, and I'm sad for you. I'm sorry.
Talking about forgiveness, that's the piece I wanted to bring into the conversation. So,
have you forgiven them?
I'm working on it every single day.
That's easier said than done.
Yes.
Webster defines forgiveness as letting go of resentment.
Okay.
It's got nothing to do with the other person. It's just letting go of resentment. I do wish you the best, Susan, and thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
We're having an open show today about our stories, the stories that are important in our lives that inform us about who we are, stories we would like other to truly know about us. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Gladys on the line. Gladys, hi, you're on the air.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Gladys.
Yes. Great to be talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. Go on.
I can hardly hear you.
Okay. I'll talk louder.
Right. I wanted to talk about helping other people, especially people that have been ill and overcoming their disabilities, and learning how to try to be happy under those circumstances.
Tell us your story.
All right, I'll tell you my story. First of all, 85 years old. I had a very interesting life. I was a contracting officer for the Defense Department. I grew up in West Philadelphia. I, besides my own two children, I raised two foster children, and they were quite a success. One whose husband became a educational advisor to all the presidents from Carter on.
Wow.
And Clinton. And anyway, she had a difficult life, but she made quite a success of herself. And I continued working. I took care of my parents after they left. Besides my two children, I was a young widow at 43, continued working, and still trying to help others. And 7 years after that, I remarried. He passed away 7 years ago. And the thing I wanted to talk about is my illness when I had a stroke five years ago.
What has that done to your thinking about yourself and your life?
Well, it took quite a while for me to recover. I had to learn to walk all over again, to talk. I still have some difficulty in writing and in reading. I was an avid reader, always writing stories. But I made up my mind I'm going to have to learn to be happy about the things that go on. And
have you been successful at that?
I have been successful. As a matter of fact, I have a male friend that I see now. My daughters are quite successful. And Well, one lives with me now, and she's really quite a help. The other one just moved back from Illinois. She's a nurse.
Well, I have to tell you a reaction.
Sure.
I don't know about all the other people that listen to your story.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was listening to your story and finding it interesting and important. And when you said you had a male friend, it made me smile. It just made me happy. So I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank you for making me happy.
Oh, that's my pleasure to make you happy.
Well, you did it, Gladys.
Oh, I'm so glad. I really am. Just be well and be happy.
You take care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Boy, I'm a happy boy after hearing Gladys's story. So some stories bring us very, very good news. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to introduce you to Andrea Collins Smith, who writes an interesting and powerful blog. Our show is an open one today about our stories, the stories of our lives. What stories are important to us? What do we need to have heard? And what's it like to truly listen to the life of another human being? Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Penn supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify may receive an initial examination and treatment with an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 12 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Next time on Day to Day. Can Detroit automakers get back on the road to making money? Most experts agree they'll need to cut healthcare costs more to do it. But who will make up the difference?
Current workers have got to take on some of the responsibility.
This country is going to have national health care. It's got to come.
Seeking a cure for Detroit's ailing auto industry. Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Tell me your story. That's what the show's about, the stories of our lives, telling them and truly having them heard. Andrea Collins Smith is a wife and a mother of six. She's battling stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer. You can read about her fight with breast cancer at a website, which is punkrockmommy.org, and I highly recommend you reading it, punkrockmommy.org. Right now, I'm going to read an excerpt from one of Andrea's recent blogs. My oncologist revealed to me at my first chemo appointment that I have cancer in the lymph nodes in my neck, throughout my left breast, left underarm, right underarm, lymph nodes in my abdomen, the bones of my sternum and pelvis. The reality is, I will never be in remission. They're not trying to cure me, but rather prolong my life. I can, however, expect to have several more years with you. I don't know how many, but you don't know how long you have either. I realize how precious the days are, and it motivates me to spend all the time I can with my loved ones. It prompts me to apologize quickly when I've hurt someone, and it motivates me to forgive quickly, too. I don't want to spend my days angry and unhappy. Sadly, it also makes me want to eat dessert after every meal, or even before every meal. It also makes me want to buy things, to make myself feel better. I'm really trying to let God fill the void instead of stuff. I often feel a strong desire to become perfect because I don't want to leave this world with a lot of unfinished business. I think we assume that we'll have years to work on our character defects. I do not think that I will really be around to work on them very much. But becoming perfect is not realistic, so I have to be a bit more patient and learn as much as I can. I keep praying. I keep apologizing. I keep forgiving, and I remind myself daily that I'm blessed. Andrea Collins-Smith, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Dan. How are you?
Well, I'm fine.
Good, good.
And you're
well. That sums up everything. That's my entire story. Now I don't need to add anything to it.
Oh, you're not going to get away with that. First, you're not going to get away with saying
right,
how are you, Dan, without Dan saying how are you, Andrea.
I'm pretty good right now.
Well,
Thank you.
I'll tell you one thing. I was wondering about, you know, with all this chemotherapy. I know one's cognitive faculties come and go. So how's your brain doing today?
I definitely have chemo brain. I'm taking the nice deep breaths and praying for some unslurred and correct, you know, sentences to come out. I do find that the chemotherapy affects me.
Okay, so
mentally.
So now that we know you have chemo brain, Andrea,
yeah.
you don't have to work real hard to pretend to be normal.
Okay.
All right. So tell me why you started a blog. Why did you want your story known?
Sorry.
Why did you want your story known?
The blog wasn't my idea. I have a very good friend named John who goes to our church, who felt that his photographs, he takes beautiful photos, and my writing about my experience would be helpful to others and the people that we love in our lives. And I had a lot of phone calls in the first few weeks, people wondering what was going on after they found out my diagnosis. And I just thought the blog was just an easy way to explain to people what was happening with me so that they would be more, it was more to calm down my friends and my loved ones and make them feel okay with what was going on. And then before I knew it, people who I didn't know were reading it, and I thought that was really unusual. And more and more people contacted me and started saying that they were getting a lot out of it, that they had experiences with people with cancer and their loved ones, and that it was helping them, and it was cathartic for them, and it was helping remind them to live in today, and it was shocking, actually.
What? How so?
I just thought it would be this little thing that my friends would read. I don't want to say that I didn't take into account the power of the internet, but I didn't take into account that anybody would really care whether or not I was doing yoga and getting acupuncture to take care of my chemo symptoms, you know? It was just something I was doing for my friends. So,
well, it's morphed into something else now. So
it has.
What's it like telling your story, having your life be that known?
Well, I guess I feel like it's a blessing, and let me say this carefully. I think that I have a rare cancer, and if my having a rare cancer and having a voice lends itself to someone else finding out about it and maybe getting an earlier diagnosis than I did, or maybe it helps some other family, or it helps impact people in a really positive way, then I see how good it is that I've had this opportunity to reach people. And I think that's where I'm coming from right now. I feel very interested in making sure that other people get the information and hopefully having it impact other people in a positive way. So,
is part of the motivation, or maybe part of the benefit, is you are becoming known. Your interior life is being known. No more secrets, no more hiding places. You know, there's a line in a poem by Rilke that says, "Where I want to unfold before you, because where I am folded, there I am a lie." And you are unfolding yourself, and I wonder what that's like for you, unfolding.
I would like to say that for the most part, I've been an open book most of my life. Some people who have known me a long time will tell you that I'm definitely the kind of person, I'll tell you too much. So I don't I don't know that I've been much in the way of, you know, I'm not a hider, but...
Is any of this also a legacy for your kids?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I have an 8-month-old, and I also have a 17-year-old. I run, you know, we have the whole age range there. And, you know, and there are times where I question whether the 8-month-old will ever know me. Like, well, I don't know how long I'll be here. So there's that. And I think that my friends and loved ones need to know daily that I'm here and that I'm still present, and that I still want to hear what they have to say, and I still want to be part of their lives and active. And my experience on the blog is that I can say, you know, I'm feeling good today. If you want to call me, I'm available, and I'm still here. So there is a legacy, and there's, you know, daily appreciation. I have to make the best of today, because this is the only day I have. It's the only one I have a hold of.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate it. And I'm getting more comfortable with people who I don't know reading the blog. I'm getting more and more used to it. But
yeah.
it's an interesting experience to be that exposed. Yeah,
it's, you're doing a wonderful service for
thank you
for you and the world. Maybe in reverse order. I wonder if you'd be interested, willing, in coming back on the show.
Absolutely.
Sooner rather
absolutely
than later.
I'd love
to hear your whole story. And you sound like a smile. You smile a lot.
I smile a lot. I laugh a lot. What else do I have? You
yeah
know, you gotta laugh. You gotta take the good with the bad. You gotta, you know, like I said, you have to eat dessert first. You have to, you know, if you have 10 minutes and you feel good, that's when I play a game with the kids, or I kiss my husband, or, you know, I tell someone I love them. And, you know, this is the only day you have. And if you're sitting around hating everybody and resenting everything, you're just wasting a lot of time, you know? So don't
well,
do it.
Yeah. I listen, I want you to come to my house and be my teacher. The heck with your kids. They'll be all right.
Yeah, well.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
You have a great day. I hope you feel good.
Yeah, you too.
All right.
Too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Andrea Collins-Smith, a wife and mother of six with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer, with kind of an amazing attitude. You can read more about her story at punkrockmommy.org. It really is an amazing website. That's punkrockmommy, one word, punkrockmommy.org. So let's go back to the phones. We're hearing people's stories of their lives, what it's like to listen, and what it's like to tell our stories. We've got George on the line.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, Dr. Dane.
Hi, George.
Hi. This is a rather emotional for me. I felt compelled since last week listening to your show to call you. I'm a 46-year-old male in Philadelphia here, and it's just like how an event, like a single event, can define your whole life. And I can give the information is when the day my mother died, August 15th, 1969. And I was 8 years old, and I'm the firstborn son. I have 4 other siblings. And I can remember that day, my father hugging me after we came back from Ascension Parish praying. But my mom had a weak heart, and she died. And I can remember that's the last time my father ever held me like that ever again.
How did
and soon after that, my father fell into the bottle. He became a full-time alcoholic. And we bounced around for the next few years. And by the time I was 13 years old, I had dropped out of school and got a job. And my father had told me that, me being the oldest, that it was my time to look after my brothers and sisters. And I don't know, it's just difficult. At times I've been carrying this shame and this guilt my whole life and trying to pretend that it doesn't exist. I'm 7 years sober. I'm in a sober relationship, and I try to live a good life, and I've also tried to maneuver in life like there's nothing wrong with me also at times. And but there's this thing. Like, when I heard your program last week, and it said, just tell me your story, and nobody's going to judge you or be critical of you or think less of you, it just compelled me to write you an email, and I thank you for replying to my email. Because I know that's the thing that keeps me stuck, that August 15th, 1969, and not just me. I have another sibling who's actively using, and for the ones that aren't, that are trying to live a normal life, I know that those events that came forth from that day has affected all of us immensely. And
continues to every day.
And continues to, and it impacts you. And it doesn't matter how successful you become or the things you think you can attain. It's that thing. And just see, when we were kids, like one of your earlier callers said, about having somebody to listen to. Like, when you're a kid, you don't know.
Right.
You don't know.
Right. And that kind of you don't know thing carries through as an adult. Let me ask you one final question, George. You said this is difficult. It sounds difficult. I can hear it in your voice. What is it you're feeling right now?
I've been waiting on to get on the phone for like 15 minutes, and I'm just was shaking up and down with anticipation, and I'm crying.
Tell me the emotion.
It's like something's bursting in me. It's like I wrote in my email, I would pay anybody any amount of money to have someone sit with me and just listen to where I've been.
Can you describe where you are right this minute? What's it like to be you right this minute?
I feel joy right now just by saying these words. And I feel this sorrow that just wells up inside me sometimes. Because I was to be the responsible one. I was supposed to take care of everything. See? My job.
George, one of the themes I'm hearing, and unfortunately we're going to have to say goodbye to one another because we're running out of time. Stop apologizing.
Yes, sir.
one of the themes I'm hearing is you were being asked to do something you didn't know how to do. You were being asked to be an adult, to be responsible, and you didn't know how to do that. You didn't know the rules. You were a kid. And I hear that over and over and over again, that people are expecting themselves to do something that they don't know how to do. And they spend a lifetime faking it, pretending they know how to do something, and always being scared that somebody's going to find out. They don't know what the hell they're doing. Well, here's the big secret, George. Ultimately, most of us don't know what the hell we're doing. You know, some are better at faking it than others. Me, I don't know what I'm doing, and I've grown pretty comfortable with that.
Okay.
It really takes me off the hook. George, I wish you the best, and okay. I wish as your heart opens, you will find more and more ears in your presence to listen to you.
I thank you for your time, sir.
All right, George, I thank you for your trust.
Okay.
Take care.
Take care. Bye now.
And we have John on the line. John, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I just wanted to share a story of listening and storytelling and healing that happened to me. I work as a waiter, and one day an elderly couple had come in, and it was a slow time, and we just got to talking and really opened up with each other. And one of the things that they said was that they were, you know, from far away, that they weren't married. They went to church, and they worried, you know, for, like, legal, financial reasons, they couldn't remarry. And they worried, what did God think about them living in sin, basically? And I said I felt that, like, right now, God's worried more about how people treat each other and that they're creating more love in the world. And the man said that he knew that the way we treat each other was what was important, and that his whole life he had treated his boss very badly. That he'd been sarcastic with him, and his boss was very nice. And it was really upsetting to him because his boss was dead and there was nothing he could do about it. And he was in his 80s and it just bothered him. And I felt this inspiration come to me and I said, you know, I'm a young person and I've been sarcastic in the past, but I'll make you a deal. Because you've told me your story, I will promise to be less sarcastic with people if you promise to forgive yourself for the way you treated your boss.
Oh, how beautiful. How beautiful.
And he started. We both started crying, and we had a hug, and it was just
Rachel,
a great moment of how listening, really being in the moment, can make us really the kind of human beings we should be.
Rachel Naomi Remen would have said that he was a blessing in your life, and you were a blessing in his. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time. And I, you know, if you've been listening and not calling in and just listening, think about it. My feeling is everybody who called in, I'd love to sit around my living room with them and just hang out and talk. And you might feel the same way also. And what created that emotion was just listening to people telling their stories. If we could do more of that, I believe, you know, we can create peace from the inside out. Well, I want to especially thank those of you who called and shared your stories. I appreciate your courage, your openness, and your honesty. I also want to thank Andrea Collins Smith, who we heard from earlier. She's a wife and mother of six, and she's got stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer. Her website is www.punkrockmommy.org. Early on, we heard from Susan Magsiman. She's the author of Family Stories and creator of familystories.org. She's also the founder of Family Stories Workshops for low-income and at-risk families. Well, if you've got a question, show idea, or comment, you can reach us at voices@whyy.org. You can listen to archive edition of Voices in the Family at our website here at WHYY, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Shane Ewing, the voice you heard at the top of the show, is our intern, I'm proud to say. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Elisa Walters produced and directed today's show. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott, and I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friend.